Welcome to episode 23 of the Just Keep Spinning podcast. My name is Andrea and I'm here with
Andrew.
And we have another special guest today. We're with Julian. Hi, Julian. Say hi, Julian.
Hey, hi, Julian.
I love when people do that. How are you doing?
I'm doing pretty good, thank you.
Okay, and we're actually here at recording inside of Grand Avenue Records during the Grand Avenue Festival. So that's why you hear some lively music in the background. You might hear some conversation. So just wanted to give you guys a heads up about what's going on around us. And I'm like, oh, I can't think. So our really quick, our Instagram is Just Keep Spinning Podcast. Our email, if you want to say you love us, you hate us, or you have an event, or you want to email music to put on the podcast, because we have done that in the past, it's justkeepspinningpodcast@gmail.com. And are there any social media handles or anything you want to highlight, Julian?
Yes, I am under Jules Quimby on Instagram, and that's just JulesQuimby. And Quimby, yes, it's based on the famous Quimby from The Simpsons, who I love dearly. And most of my posts on Instagram are usually clips of records that I enjoy, or something, sometimes records I've just purchased, and little maybe bits and pieces of video of live performances on TV, or maybe something silly like Give Me a Break with Nell Carter doing some dance or something like that. So it's very lighthearted. It's usually music and video related.
Fun stuff that people would like, that you feel people would like to see, that you want to
share.
Yes,
yes.
And you're, don't forget the kittens. The cats are on there.
That's
too.
Right. I'm an avid cat lover. I have rescued several cats in the past few years. And yeah, definitely a cat lover. Currently, one of my little kitty cats, the princess, she is apparently going through the change, and she is in heat. She used to be our princess, but now she's Lil' Kim, basically. And yeah, so it's Freaknik in the living room. So bear with us. So we're going through a stressful time, but we're going to get that handled.
I think you guys, I believe that you're going to make it through it.
Oh, well, thank you. That's right. We're going to pray on it. That's what
exactly.
We're going to do. That's what we do. We pray on it.
Okay. And so really quick, there's an event I want to highlight on November 24th at Valley Bar. It's going to be Loose Joints. It's going to be Coco and Santos. They're the resident DJs with special guest French Toast.
Yeah.
Doors open at 10. It's 21 plus, and it's actually free to get in. And Julian, was there anything you wanted to highlight? Or
yeah, there is something I wanted to say. Don't you think that in hindsight, my DJ name should have been French Toast?
So what do you actually go by, though? Jules? Julian?
Yeah, actually, I go by DJ Julian French. I've been highlighted as Jules Quimby, but I never really had a real actual DJ name. It's always been DJ Julian.
Do you regret that?
Not really. Not really. A couple of people have given me name ideas, but they've been taken already. Like, dude, you should be Judge Jules. It's like, I think somebody got that already. You know? So, yeah.
So it's so hard, huh, yeah, to come up with a name.
Yeah, I have a lot of aliases, you know, kind of like Erykah Badu. She has, you know, Loretta Brown and all these other different aliases. So that's awesome. Yeah, just DJ.
So can
Julian.
I call you Julian Badu then, since you have a lot of aliases like Erykah?
I would love that. You know what? We met Erykah Badu for her, I think it was 2010, for the New America Tour at the Marquee Theater. She's everything you would imagine. And a little known Janelle Monáe opened up. She's also just so sweet. So aww, it was just a great show. Really great show.
That's awesome.
The Erykah Badu show. If you do go to an Erykah Badu show, keep this in mind. She takes her time. She will take her time. So during intermission, if you have the time, go out. If you have something you want to smoke or inhale, do that. You might want to do it before the show. Because she definitely takes her time, but it's quite an experience. It's almost like it's all unrehearsed. And it's great. So, yeah.
She goes up there and just does her thing on her time. And she knows that you guys are sharing your time together, so she's not in a rush to just get it done.
Yes. Yes, absolutely.
Well, that's good to know. So
do you have any pickups?
Yeah, I actually do. Actually, yeah. I took the day off the other day and actually came through here, and I did get pickups. I'm trying to remember what I got. I think I just got some random 12s that I picked up, and I think that's pretty much it. What about you, Julian? Have you got anything within the past month or so?
Yes, I recently picked up an EP by the Avalanches. It's called Electricity. Avalanches had a phenomenal album called Since I Left You. I think it was in the early 2000s. And it was kind of like a conglomeration of samples, breakbeats, and just weirdness. Kind of reminiscent of Fatboy Slim. Great record. It's a two-record set. So I think that was probably the coolest thing that I picked up. Yeah.
Oh, okay. And did you have any pickups, Andrew?
I didn't have any pickups that are worth noting, because I can't completely remember anything, to be completely honest.
Nothing that you can, that's sticking out. Oh, wait, we went to Stinkweeds.
Oh, yeah, we got a couple.
We got that Thelma Jones, I think.
Yeah, we got a couple new releases from Numero Group and from, what's the other one?
Coal Mine. So since you can kind of get those locally at Stinkweeds, a lot of people don't know that. They carry the Coal Mine stuff and things like that. So we just kind of try to tell people that, to put it out there. And
I think I mentioned earlier about, we were talking about Sgt. Pepper's. There was a Bill Cosby album that I picked up. And in the late 60s, not only did he do his stand-up stuff, which was produced by Alan Sherman on Warner Brothers, he did a lot of music projects. You know, I'm not too sure if he spearheaded the arranging and the writing, but he funded a lot of bands to do these music albums. So it was like Bill Cosby Presents. And there was one particular record he did where he covers Sgt. Pepper's.
Really?
And yes, he covers Sgt. Pepper's. And he's not really singing. He's kind of yelling. And it's just this, the music is great. But, you know, it's like, it was 20 years ago today. Sgt. Pepper's on the band. And I think I played it in one of my sets when I played at Zia one time. But it was awesome. Yeah, Bill Cosby, he funded a lot of music projects. And we're not going to go into any,
anything else. Yeah. Yeah, but he funded music.
Yes, he did.
I did not know that, though.
I didn't know
that's
that either.
Good to
that's
know.
Super awesome. So, one second. I guess I just get into my little segment. So, every oop, and that was a lot of noise. And I turned my phone on silent, and I guess it's not. But anyways,
he's getting his fantasy football updates right now. That was the ESPN.
Here we go.
We don't talk what I do, not on the podcast. On the podcast. So something we always do on every episode that when we have a guest is we ask them, do you know the number one song on the Hot 100 on the date of your birth?
No, I do not know. So can I take a guess?
Yes,
of
course.
I'm not going to guess the song, but could it possibly be a Beatles song? Because I think they called it quits in 1970.
No, it is not. It's a Simon and Garfunkel song. Bridge over troubled water.
Okay.
And so the other one.
And when was this?
This is in 1970.
Okay,
I dig that. At least it wasn't like, you know, itsy bitsy teeny weeny yellow polka dot. Yeah, Simon and Garfunkel. I can get with that. That's great. Yeah.
So, and the other thing we do, we always do it when you're 14. The number one song when you're 14-year-old. 14 years old is supposed to define your life, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So, did you know that song?
Let me guess. Could it be "I Feel for You" by Chaka Khan?
It is not. Oh. But I will go over the top 10.
Okay.
On that date of birth.
That's awesome.
So number 10 was Karma Chameleon by Culture Club.
Oh.
He's on my list.
Kenny Loggins, Footloose was number 9.
All right.
Number 8 was the Eurythmics. Eurythmics, Here Comes the Rain, I believe.
Okay, I'm digging that, yes.
Number 7 was Huey Lewis and the News, I Want a New Drug.
Mm.
Number 6, Nobody Told Me, John Lennon. Number 5, Somebody's Watching Me, Rockwell,
yeah.
Number 4, Thriller, Michael Jackson.
Of course.
Number 3, 99 Balloon, Loft Balloons, Nena.
Nena, yeah.
Number 2, Cyndi Lauper, Girls Just Want to Have Fun. And number 1, Jump Van Halen.
Jump, oh, wow.
Jump.
From the album and the year 1984.
Yes. On your date of birth.
Yeah.
Does that define your life, though?
Jump. Yes, it does. It really does. Yeah, all of those groups, you know, Eurythmics, they came back after Sweet Dreams with Here Comes the Rain Again. Just a fascinating song. Great album, too. Touch. That got a lot of play in my little cassette Walkman. See, we played cassettes back in the day.
So, Julian, you're obviously our guest today, and I think I've talked to you a few times, but I've never actually had a conversation with you, so this is going to be nice for me, because I'll get to know you a little bit more, because I just see you around either at Loose Joints or here at Grand Avenue, basically.
Yep.
So, where are you from? Were you born here?
Born and raised here in Phoenix. Yes.
Awesome. It makes me happy.
Yeah, you don't see very many of us Phoenicians.
Because I am too. I'm born and raised here. So.
That's awesome.
Good. I'm a transplant.
Yeah. He's basically from here, though. Hmm. He came here when he was five, so.
Okay.
It doesn't count.
You tell him about your own group?
Oh, we'll get to that. We'll get to that.
He's all, I want to put it out there. Oh, man. Let it be known.
Oh.
If hey, Aaron.
Yeah, born and raised in Phoenix. Born and raised. Yeah. Seen all the changes. All the changes. So, you're also a Phoenician. Do mm-hmm. you remember Wallace and Ladmo?
I remember, yes, Wallace and
okay.
Ladmo, yeah.
All right.
Yeah, somebody else remembers.
Finally, somebody else remembers.
I don't know what you guys are talking about.
See?
Exactly.
Come on, you're so ignorant. I'm just kidding.
You ignorant Californian.
You uncultured swine. Get out of here.
I mean, every city, every town, every state has their own children's show, you know, local children's show, and Wallace and Ladmo. It was with a long-running children's show on TV5 KPA show, and they would run, you know, cartoons and stuff, give away prizes and things like that. But that's every city. But yeah, in Phoenix it was Wallace and Ladmo.
Yes. Oh, yeah. The you more did, you know.
I can't believe you didn't know.
I learn stuff every day. Every podcast I learn something new.
Yeah, every episode you do learn something new.
Every podcast episode.
So are you initially from like the East Valley or what part of the valley?
South Phoenix. Yes.
South Phoenix. Oh, okay.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So you're right there in the thick of things.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. Great childhood.
So, growing up in South Phoenix, I feel like I always say that's kind of like where the true heart of Phoenix is from. My grandparents were from South Phoenix, so I have roots over there too. I'm more from the west side though.
Okay.
But my grandparents, so I would visit the south side because that's where they were initially from. And mm-hmm. Like the house that my Nana lived in, her dad actually built it.
What?
So it's like yeah. So. So I have a lot of history here too. So growing up, was music like a big thing in your life? Did your parents listen to music?
Absolutely, yeah. Probably my earliest music memory was probably when I was four. And for my fourth birthday, first record that I know that I got for my birthday was the Average White Band's Pick Up the Pieces. And I believe there is a picture of me holding that record, and I believe I have headphones on. I used to use that for one of my little ads for my DJ event or something like that. But my father would bring home records, 45s, 33 LPs, things like that. But he would go to, little thrift stores and flea markets and bring just a conglomeration of different things, pop, rock, jazz, blues, you name it. So a lot of that kind of formed my love for music. And not particularly any genre, but just being able to grab a record, play it, take it off, put it on the B-side, and when I would get bored, my mom would say I would stand on the actual record player to see if I would spin around, and I destroyed a lot of record players because of that.
But they didn't have enough torque.
But they kept on bringing them home. They kept bringing them, I kept destroying them.
So like you said, your parents, your dad, you said he just loved music in general. It wasn't like something specific where he was just into one thing. So
yeah, being from a certain era, I think he really liked a lot of blues, you know, B.B. King and things like that, early rock and roll, Little Richard and things like that. But, you know, as time grew on, you know, he kind of gravitated to what was in the times, you know, like Al Green and... I'll never forget the one time in the 80s, I think it was in 84, I believe, he was asking me, he said, what is this song by Prince? It goes, doot, 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 doot. I was like, no, Dad, no. You can't listen to what I'm listening to now, please. No. No.
So did he end up liking Prince?
I think he had a vague admiration for him, but not too much.
He wasn't like super into it, but he understood. He's like, oh, that's Prince, and I'm feeling it. I like it. Like,
yeah, yeah.
Too.
But then he's like, I'll take this BB King album instead. So I don't know about that Little Richard looking dude.
He is Little Richard looking. That's true.
I mean, I can't say I had never seen that, but now that you mentioned it, I see it even more Little Richard.
Yeah, yeah. The great thing about my parents is they knew that I had a love for music and picking up music and buying music. And even in the, you know, late 70s and 80s, it was not an expensive hobby to have. I mean, 45s were like, you know, you can buy them for a buck, you know, a record album for maybe $8 or $9. However, Stevie Wonder came out with Songs in the Key of Life, which was a double LP, and this was 76, and I begged my mom for this album. And that was a, I think it was 12 or 13 bucks, you know, and I'm almost like, that's kind of steep. But she knew that I really loved music, so she picked that album up for me, and we bought it at Strickles Records and Tapes right downtown, just a signature record store in the 70s, 80s, and 90s. And another thing about my folks, they really didn't, you know, they didn't restrict any type of music. They didn't really go, let me see what you're listening to. And I thought that was that, looking back, it was great, because, you know, in the 80s and 90s, the, you know, the parental stickers and things like that came into play. So
it was Al Gore's wife, right?
Yes.
Tipper Gore, was
Tipper.
It? Tipper, damn you, Tipper.
Yeah. Tipper Gore, you freaking winch.
Yeah, yeah. So they really, they kind of stayed away. They kind of let us, you know, find our own little way. You know, my older sister, she listened to certain things, and then I listened to certain things, but they kind of let us, they let us progress and grow, and then find our own way musically. So, I have them to thank for that. So that was, I thought that was awesome.
So, did you ever play any? Because obviously you would DJ, so you got behind the turntables. But did you ever actually play any instruments or anything growing up?
Yes, I played keyboards and I played drums. Matter of fact, I was in a band for a short while in the late '80s. We were called the Fourth Phase, and. Yeah, since Coco kind of mentioned it in passing, I might as well just bring it up now. Yeah, it was a short-lived thing, but it was probably one of the coolest times of my life. And we hooked up with an older gentleman who funded us playing certain places, and we recorded an album, which once in a while, if you go to eBay, you can find one. And I was sure that I confiscated all those copies. But... you know, Ready for the World. Remember that? Oh, Sheila, Ready for the World.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, we were not ready for the world. but we were proud to play. We had Eddie M, Sheila E's saxophonist, playing on our album. And we recorded at a few cool recording studios in California. But it was it didn't really go anywhere. But it was a good experience. It was a lot of fun. Once in a while, I'll get like a message from somebody saying, hey, dude, I bought your guys' album on eBay. And I respond like, why? Why would you do that?
So what kind of music was it? Like,
it was typical 1987 R&B, dance, top 40 type stuff. Nothing too deep. That's like, we wanted to be Prince. We wanted to be The Time. At the time, I was like, can we be more like maybe Depeche Mode or New Order or something like that?
You wanted a little bit more of that?
A little dark, yeah. Yeah, I had a great love for Depeche Mode. A lot of dark dance type stuff, which I still enjoy. But it didn't work. It didn't work. We were very immature. We did not.
Because you were late teens, early 20s?
Yeah, late teens, early 20s. We were not disciplined, but it was fun.
I'm sure it was a learning experience, though, right?
Yeah, it was great. It was great.
You had some good experiences out of it?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, a lot of fun. A lot of, not a lot of parental guidance during that time when we were on the road.
So did you tour, like, what kind of areas did you tour in?
We did a couple of places in L.A. One was the Total Experience, which it's a legendary spot where a lot of up-and-coming bands have played and actually got signed and gone on to bigger and better things. The club was featured in the movie Dolomite, a blaxploitation film. But yeah, that was one of the places we played. And we were one of the opening acts for Johnny Kemp.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Just
yeah.
Got paid Friday night. Johnny Kemp. Yeah, and another band opened after us. And I think that they sabotaged some of our equipment because my keyboard was not functioning correctly. And we just bombed massively. And I was.
Were you embarrassed?
I was very embarrassed. I was very upset. I was inconsolable after that night because it was just embarrassing.
You're like, I had so much writing on this and it just didn't work out.
I was like, I don't want to do this anymore. That's it. Come on, help me, somebody, please. I'm going to join the Mary Jane girls. I'm out of here.
Join the Mary Jane girls. Yo, they have their stuff together, okay? So, so that was, like you said, in the late 80s,
yeah,
correct?
87, 88.
So were you still living here and traveling?
Yeah, I was still living at home. Still living at home. Yeah.
So when you were here, so in the 80s, I know, like we said, you mentioned Circles, and that's obviously an infamous landmark here for Phoenicians that yeah. are from here. Mm-hmm. What other record stores did you... Is there another record store that stands out in your mind that no longer is here but you miss?
Yes. Charts was another record store on Central, and it was further up just a few blocks away from Circles. That was a place to go if you were more into hip hop and 12 inches and rap. They were kind of more the cooler kids. So if you wanted something on import, or in some cases a bootleg 12 inch or something, that was a place to go. If the Circles didn't have it, then Charts would have it. If Charts didn't have it, then Circles would have it. So Charts was amazing. It was a smaller store, but it was just a hipper, cooler spot.
And you said that was on Central?
Yes, also on Central. And, of course, I discovered Zia in the mid-80s, and Zia was kind of cool. At the time, there was one on 7th Avenue and Indian School, and that's the first one that I used to go to. And it was more of a punk, an alternative vibe to it. And what's really interesting, I always tell this story to people who work at Zia's now. Every time I would walk into the store, they would take off whatever punk or alternative record they would play, and they'd start playing rap music.
Shut up.
This is, I swear to God, and two other
I believe
swear
you.
Swear to God, and two other white ladies, I swear. They would, and I was like, thank you, I think. I just wanted the Red Hot Chili Peppers.
You're like, can I get some Depeche Mode or something?
And they did not play the edited version. They're just like, oh, do you have to? Really? Come on, guys. But that was fun. Yeah. But Zia was great because as the late 80s and early 90s progressed, you would hear a lot of just great stuff and a lot of things that you would hear, and then I would be like, okay, I have to have that. Who is that? This is Beck? Beck? Who is this Beck? Okay, I got to have it. So I learned a lot about a lot of new different artists that were being played at the store. But yeah, Zia was amazing. They've gone through a lot of changes, but it'll always be one of the best here in Phoenix. And in South Phoenix, there was a store called Poor Man's. It was called Poor Man's Records and Tapes, and that was on Central and Southern. And not only was it a cool record store, but sometimes they would press records by local artists. And those are highly, highly sought after. Highly sought after records. Because Aaron, he has a few, and Degentrification, Alex, he has some. I have a few myself. And they range from blues to rap to R&B. But that's an awesome, it was an awesome store. So it was kind of old school. Mom and Pop, which you don't really see much anymore. But yeah, Poor Man's Record and Tapes.
That's interesting, because we don't really know, like him, Andrew, and I, about like... Like, Aaron gave us this 45, and it's the address that's on there is the house in Mesa, so I Googled the address, and literally the property just doesn't exist anymore, but it's on Solo, but S-O-U-L-O, so but it's in Spanish, so it's like a Mexican record.
Oh, okay.
So one side is like a corrido, and then the other side's like Brown Eyed Soul, in a sense, or Chicano Soul, whatever, but... And I tried to look for anything on the label, and I couldn't find anything, nothing. So I was like, dang, I got to find somebody that knows about that.
Oh, yeah. There was another store in South Phoenix, Record City. And I think they opened up around 1980 or 81. And a kid that I went to school with, Willie Aguilera, his folks owned that place. And it was on Southern and Central. In the corner right there where Peter Piper Pizza is, and it was really cool. It was a cool spot if you wanted to buy like the latest funk or rap records, and you could get these baseball shirts with your name or something in old English writing. That was just...
Of course.
That was it.
Well, their last name is Aguilar, you said, right?
Yeah. And it was really cool because I would always see this shirt, and there were certain variations of the shirt. And the shirt was homegirls, and it was like these like chola dressed girls. And if you go to some other stores like Poor Man's, you'll see the same shirt, homegirls, but they were black girls. You know, it was like girls getting over braids and the cornrows with the beads. It was awesome.
Oh my God, that sounds amazing.
Yeah, homegirls. I don't think they made one for the white women though.
Yo, sorry. You gotta rock one of the
exactly. It's called the Gap. Yeah.
Andrew's dying. I'm just letting y'all know right now. Andrew's dying. He's literally covering his mouth. I can't even see him. Oh my God.
Moving on.
Okay. But but that's so interesting. I didn't know like all that history. Like we said, because a lot of people, they're like either not from here or they're just not well versed in a lot of that stuff, or maybe they were just weren't going around in the communities then. So if you could bring back one of those stores, which one would you bring back?
Oh, Poor Man's. Poor Man's Records and Tapes. I would definitely do that. That is where I picked up the album 1999, the LP, Prince, 1999. I think it was $12.98 plus tax, and I barely had enough to get it. And I think I was a few pennies short, and the lady was like, "It's all right, baby. I'll go ahead and take care of this time. But you pay me back when you're..." Thank you, Bertha, whatever your name is.
She knew you. She knew you were good for it. She was like, "Oh, he's going to come back. I know he'll come back."
Yeah. Aww. And they also had those. They were not afraid to put them up front. Blowfly, these records. Blowfly, who was Clarence Reed. And Clarence Reed, he was under TK Records in Florida. And he produced a lot of records and wrote a lot of songs. Betty Wright's Clean Up Woman, a lot of stuff in the 70s. And he did a lot of stuff for Casey and the Sunshine Band and things like that.
Is that like that TK Disco stuff?
Yeah, yes. Okay. Yes, and he created an alter ego called Blowfly. And he wore like a mask and he sang like X-rated parodies of songs. And he started doing X-rated raps and things like that. There's a documentary of his stuff called The Weird World of Blowfly. But he did a lot of music and he sold all of his publishing. And he was kind of destitute on his last days, but he got picked up by a manager and he kind of did a little tour and things like that. But the thing is, he sold all of his publishing and a few songs were sampled heavily. And had he not got rid of his publishing, he would be sitting on a gold mine now. I think Beyonce sampled one of his songs for Upgrade You or something
like
that.
Yeah, with Jay-Z, yeah.
Yeah, but Blowfly, he was, the album covers are really X-rated. I mean, these naked women with the tits out and everything. Can we say that? Can we say tits?
Yeah, yeah, okay. We can say that.
Breastus is out? Okay, breastus. But yeah, Blowfly, those records were, we saw those, like, oh my God, this is... Those ladies there, I'm like 9 years old. Those ladies, they have to breast this out. That's nasty. That's not supposed to. Mom? Oh.
Sorry, Mom. So you're in your band, and then, like you said, you go around to the record stores. So did you ever, like, go around to the record stores here and sell your music, like, sell your records or anything like that?
I believe Poor Man's had a few copies of our cassettes and records in the store. I believe so. I'm not too sure. But, yeah, I think that was the one store that you could actually... And I think Circles had it, too. Yeah, our manager, he was a cool guy. He was a very cool guy. I think he had some underlining things that were going on. But he was a great guy. He kept it away from me. I didn't see it, but he was a great guy. And I think he finagled his way to getting some records in the stores, and people bought them, you know, just a few copies.
So do you have any left over at home that are just sitting there?
I have a sealed copy that somebody bought for me. Because I damn sure didn't want to buy it, but somebody bought a sealed copy and gave it to me, and I haven't opened it yet, and I'm not going to open it. And people are like, "Oh, man, you should bring that record over from your band." I was like, why? I'm not going to do that.
You don't want to relive it.
Yeah, no.
I lived it already.
I just wish we could have had a little more direction in the music department. I mean, the songs are okay. They're just not great. They're just not great. I hope ex-band members aren't listening to this, because they're just, this is just, that's
so did you was there any venues around that time, like just any through time, whether it's when you were younger or even up to current, that you remember that you either frequented because they were known for always just anything that was being played there was really awesome, or any venues that you missed that are closed or anything like that?
You mean like record stores or something like that?
No, venues just like, for instance, when I was younger, a venue that I knew for a period of time, like the Modified used to put on shows for a period of time. Okay, so I'd be like, oh, I'm going to go to the Modified because they always play these type. They get these bands to come through. Mm-hmm. So if I go there, I'm probably going to like it.
Yeah. I do remember Modified. I've been there a couple of times. I wasn't a huge bar go out type of person until I'd say my mid-20s. And that's when I really started going out and going out to certain bars and certain clubs. And Harley's 101 was a pretty awesome place, because the DJ there, I think his name was Dave, he'd play some just great dance mixes of songs. And he was just awesome. I know he got sick of me because I would go up there and ask him, "Dave, what is this song?" And he would tell me. And it was, I usually went there for the music. And occasionally hooking up, but that, mostly for the music.
Yeah, I've always been about the music, okay?
Yeah, all about the music.
So it's not in South Phoenix, but everybody knows about it. Have you ever been to the Purple Turtle?
I don't know what that is.
You don't? It's in Maryville.
Okay, well, that's kind of westish.
That's why I said it's not in South Phoenix. Okay. So I was just wondering if you ever went there. Because everyone said, that place is trash. That's what people always say. And I'm like, but it's still there,
this
though.
This is probably...
It's still there.
The trashiest places are the bestest places.
I heard the
write
wings.
That one down. The trashiest places are the bestest places.
Yeah. So how did you initially, though, start with DJing? Like, when did you start doing that? And how did you get interested in it?
Oh, okay. I think I was... I used to watch the DJs as opposed to watching the dance floor and being on the dance floor. And I would just study the DJs and I'm like, okay, I think I can do that. And my cousin, Andre, who was also interested in the same things, we kind of hooked up and we got a little bit of equipment together. Before we had any professional equipment, we had like a record player here and like a Sears turntable here. And we would just kind of put them together and just do weird stuff. But we started actually DJing small functions in like the mid-80s, 86, 87. And a few other friends of mine, we did a few high school dances in like 86-ish. And then I switched schools and then I exclusively started DJing with my cousin. And we did little functions, wedding things like that. And... another friend of mine, he was with a group called the Windy City DJs, which is a DJ company. And my friend Rich, good guy. And I kind of went along with him and helped him on certain things. But jump to the late 90s, that's when I got my real first club gig. And that was at Polyester's in Scottsdale. And that was a disco / new wave 80s throwback club. And one side was the new wave 80s, and the other side was disco funk. So they put me in the disco funk side. And that was a lot of fun. It was great because that was, you know, I knew the music. I knew what they wanted. And I kind of fine-tuned it the way that I wanted. Oops, sorry about that. And that was in the late 90s. I think it was 99. And... the millennium and, you know, everybody's scared and paranoid. It was New Year's and nothing happened.
Did you actually play at the club on New Year's, like going into the year today?
Yes.
And were people actually kind of like being weirded out or anything?
Well, the sky was all purple and there were people running everywhere trying to run from the destruction. You know, I didn't even care.
I was actually in the city.
I'm waiting for
day.
You to pick that up. It's like, really? Were people running? No.
I know you're lying.
No, it's a Prince lyric, man. Yeah.
I'm like, so.
But after that kind of died out. And then I would pick up certain like guest gigs. I was kind of the pickup guy. Well, this guy's absent. Could you come in and play? And could you do this? And so that played out in the 90s. And then the 2000s came along. And then that's when the DJ equipment kind of changed. And people started introducing the earliest inception of the CDJ, which was just a CD player with a pitch control. And if you got a real high deluxe version of it, you could have looping functions and things like that. But this is kind of pre-MP3, pre-laptop. So a lot of the music played on CDs and things.
So
but,
how did you feel about that at the time? Like, did you care? You're just like, whatever, I don't care.
I was like, well, this is kind of convenient. I can carry one little case of CDs as opposed to two or three crates. But at Polyester's, I kind of brought both. I brought records and I brought CDs. So I kind of switched with both. But the laptop thing, I was a little late. Little late to the game on that. I was like, is that really gonna be a thing? And turns out it was. But here's the thing. Oh, sorry. Vinyl has been chugging along, you know, since however. And I guess you could say it's made a resurgence. I don't know. But, you know, I've been buying and collecting records since I was just a little tater tot, or as Polly Walnuts would say, and since I was in short pants. And luckily, I've held on to a lot of my records. And I haven't counted, but I guess in my collection, there's close to 9,000. And that's a lot of records.
That is a lot of records.
It's a lot.
So do you have some in storage, or are they all just out at your house? Like, you have them stored in your house, or are they, like, actually in storage?
They're in my house. A lot of them are boxed up in closets. But actually, my music room is under construction right now. I have a shelf that I need to build, and I plan on doing that this weekend. I was about to do it today, but...
You're all over here doing something.
Yeah.
Some people keep bugging me about this podcast.
No. It's like, you know what? I you know what would be the greatest gift? To come home, and it would be all built up, and all said, I was like, oh, thank you, Bert. That's great. Thank you so much. But I have to do that. But yeah, I held on to a lot of my vinyl, and it's kind of crazy that people are like, oh yeah, I got rid of my records, there's no room, and I can't do that. But I've held on to a lot of my records, a lot. And people who've known me will dump off records to me. They'll say, hey, I got some records at my house, I'm going to throw out. If you want them, you can have them. So
you're just like, sure, bring them over.
Yeah, I do that a lot. So yeah, I think I made a smart decision by holding on to a lot of the vinyl. And a lot of those records have a lot of history. A lot of those have a lot of stories behind them, just certain eras in my life. And like I said, the Average White Band, Pick Up the Pieces, that was probably my first record.
And you still have that one?
I still have that record. It's in horrific shape. It's in terrible shape.
You just loved it a lot, that's why.
Yeah, it symbolizes a lot. And like I mentioned, you know, the Stevie Wonder album. And, you know, my mom and dad had a lot to do with that. And while they were probably not as huge music fans nowadays, but they kind of had a lot to do with me having a love for music. And I'm always discovering new stuff, and not necessarily new, but new to me. It always goes back to Miles Davis, I guess. He's like the coolest man. I mean, he gave birth to the cool. How do you do that?
So is that your goal in life, to be like Miles Davis?
Absolutely. And to speak like this. Do you know what? There was an interview somewhere, and I had to YouTube it. He said, what was the last thing? What would be the last thing you would want to do if you had 1 minute to live? And I think Miles Davis, I'm paraphrasing, he said, joke a white man to death. And I believe he would.
I don't think he was playing.
His autobiography is just amazing. It's just great. And he came from... a great upbringing. I believe his father was a dentist and his mother was some kind of school teacher, so he had a great upbringing, but he went through a lot of, you know, racial discrimination and everything, and ended up coming out on the end. I won't see that movie with Don Cheadle. I don't think it would have done him justice, but his autobiography is just great. I don't know why we went off on a tangent here on Miles
Davis. Because we're just talking. That's
how we do it here on this podcast. That's how we do it on Just Keep Spinning Podcast.
I guess that's what I wanted to ask you, too. So, obviously, I'm born and raised here, and I'm Mexican. Andrew's basically from here. He's Mexican and stuff like that. But, like, I know that certain people in the community have obviously faced discrimination. So, have you ever gone to a club or anywhere back in the day and had your own experiences where you're like, what the heck, man? Like, you know why someone's discriminating against you, for instance?
I think in retrospect, looking back on certain situations, I think, I think they were trying to do something. There are a couple of places that I wanted to DJ at, and they're not so top forward, but kind of alternative. But see, I was really into the stuff. I knew it inside out, and I had my little records and things. And the thing was, I forgot my headphones, and... I don't know if they just say, well, just go back home and get your headphones or something like that. And I came back and it was like, oh, the spot's been filled already. And I was like, oh, really, dude? Come on, man. So I don't know. I look back on a lot of different situations and I don't know. Maybe I'm just aloof about it. But I don't know. Some places you just gravitate to and some you just don't. I don't know. Maybe I just lucked out. But I don't know.
Yeah, Phoenix.
That's a weird question. I'd really have to think about that.
Yeah, because I just know that sometimes it does happen to people, and like sometimes they don't think about it till later, and they're like, "Man, that was really messed up. I think I know why they did that now. Looking back on it, maybe in the moment I didn't understand."
Yeah, you do the Homer Simpson thing where after the fact it's like, "Wait a minute, I think I'm being discriminated at, Marge."
Oh, I know. Who doesn't love The Simpsons, right?
I love Dr. Hibbert. He's great.
Dr.
Diagnosis? Delicious.
So if they released a Dr. Hibbert covering Bill Cosby doing Sgt. Pepper's, would you get that?
I certainly would and add it to my record collection right now. Well, bye-bye. I just let myself out here.
So, Julian, what is it that you're collecting right now? Do you just collect whatever nowadays, or is it anything specific?
Nothing specific right now. What am I collecting right now? I never looked at myself as a collector because everything that I buy, I play. There's rarely something I'm going to take home and hang up on my wall. I do want to pick up more soundtracks. I was a huge horror fan in the 80s, and while I did have a few horror soundtracks like Dawn of the Dead and Halloween and things like that, I lost a few on the way. So I definitely want to dig a little deeper and find some John Carpenter stuff on vinyl because he was just amazing. Just amazing.
You know, so they re-released a bunch of John Carpenter stuff, right?
Yes, and I did buy the Halloween 3 soundtrack, but honestly, I kind of want to buy another soundtrack. I kind of want to put away and want to play out because I think it's colored vinyl. It's like orange. It's like, oh man, this is really nice.
You're like, it's nice to look at.
Yeah, it's great. But I mean, what I do have, I have a lot of really cool stuff. But I mean, not bragging, but it's like, I'm glad I bought this.
Well, you've been in the game for a long time, so
I got ahead. I have a few years of a head start, so I'm kind of glad of that. And it's not, like I said, it's not an expensive hobby. It can be if you're doing it wrong, but you know, like I said, it's just a matter of just going out to everywhere. And people ask me, so where do you go to look for records? So everywhere. Do you go to the thrift store, Goodwill? That little Lutheran flea marketplace, you know, you're going to look through a lot of Andy Williams records. But you might find that one little prize in there.
So has there ever been a record that you let go and you're like, I shouldn't have done that?
Yes. Yes. Yeah.
You see his face right now. He's like, I'm just thinking about it. Thanks. Thanks for bringing it up.
Yeah. There was, like I said, John Carpenter. There was the soundtrack of The Thing on LP. I guess I sold it for just a few dollars online a few years ago, and I'm looking for it. I was like, did I sell it? I'm looking on Discogs, and it's like $180, and this was just a couple years ago, and I was like, maybe I shouldn't have gotten rid of that. What's the matter with you, dude?
Well, I feel like, too, there's been a resurgence with people actually wanting, because we haven't been collecting very long, probably just since my daughter's been born, basically. That's how I always, I'm like, oh, yeah, since she's been born, so she's 13. But even back then, I would buy soundtracks, and I would get a lot of them just, they were so cheap, because nobody want them, so I have tons of stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And then I've noticed now that some of them are going for more, and I'm like, why? But I think it's just people are wanting them more, they're desiring them more, and that's probably why they're going.
Yeah, original pressings are essentially more rare, and you know, people want those. But yeah, I have a lot of weird, just you would think, who would make the soundtrack of this? Like the soundtrack to Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf, the Elizabeth Taylor. But the soundtrack has dialogue from dialogue music. It's really weird. And for a certain time, soundtracks were like that because we had the Bonnie and Clyde LP soundtrack, my sister and I, and there was dialogue, music.
That's how The Wizard of Oz, I have a few variations of The Wizard of Oz because that was like one of my favorite movies, and there's one I have where it's an actual just movie soundtrack, but then there's one I have where it has dialogue on it, and then it has music, and it's like to going through the whole movie, and I can like listen to it and envision the movie when I'm listening to it. Like,
do you have a children's albums? Do you like children's albums?
Oh, yeah, I have a lot. We have lots of those.
I have a lot. Like Alex, Degentrification, he has a lot of really cool children's records that he kind of mixes in with his sets, and I have a lot of Sesame Street stuff. LPs and records.
Sesame Street is funky.
Yeah, and it's weird because all the, you know, Bob, Susan, you know, David, they all did their own little albums and stuff. I think Big Bird did something. And, there's an Oscar the Grouch. It's called Let a Frown Be Your Umbrella. I mean, Sesame Street, they were spitting out records back in the day. And I have a lot of those. Those are really cool. Those are really cool. A lot of those I had as a kid. A lot of Bill Cosby albums, like the 60s stuff, those were like my real first friends when I was a little kid. I'm like 3 or 4 listening to these records. And I was really interested and fascinated with, he would say something and they would laugh. And I didn't get most of the jokes, but
just the fact that he was getting a reaction out of them. Yeah.
Same thing with those Cheech and Chong records. Like, my dad brought one home and I'm like, I don't know what's going on, but this is funny.
Yeah, I know it's funny.
Acapulco Gold, what is that? that's crazy. It's like, why can't Dave answer the door? Is he stupid? What's the matter with him?
So I have a question. In your collection, because there's a few records that I can remember that I just didn't, I should have bought, and I just didn't. I passed on it for, at the time, I was just, you know, and you're just like, you know, I don't want to spend that much money. I'm just like, yeah, I don't want to, I want it, but I just don't want to be, I want to be tight right now. So there's a record that, it was Vincent Price, and he, do you have a Vincent Price record by chance? Like, of him just talking? Like, there was this one, and I found it at a record store. And I was just being cheap, and I did not buy it. Or like a Seance record. There's a really cool Seance record, and I left that too. And I was like, why did I leave that?
There's two records I bought recently. One of them may have something to do with Vincent Price. One is a Bela Lugosi record, and I think he's telling stories like the Legends of Sleepy Hollow. The other record, it might, I don't know, it might be Vincent Price, and I may have put it away. I may have put it back because it was a little too pricey. See what I did? But no, I don't think so. And how did it get Vincent Price to do the rap on Thriller? How did that happen?
I did read that, but it's because Michael Jackson loved Vincent Price. I know that.
That's very true. Yeah. Not to change the subject, but do you remember the Jacksons song in the 80s? This is like a couple years after Thriller. It's called State of Shock. He did it with Mick Jagger, and they don't play it on the radio. But it was a big hit.
I know the song you're talking about. Okay,
The original version, he sang it with Freddie Mercury.
Really?
And they scrapped it.
Why? So is there a master out there
now? How much you want to bet they're going to reissue that now?
That's true.
Because of the Queen movie.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure. Why wouldn't they? These record companies, sometimes I feel like they hold on to like those master tapes and then they just try to use it to capitalize later.
Yeah, I just think I would have liked to have heard that. And I'm like, why did they switch from Freddie to Mick Jagger? That's bizarre. But seriously, Vincent Price, I'd have to look. I think I might have something.
Yeah, I'm sure I have something in there in all my collection, my records.
Yeah, I got a lot of those soundtracks and children's records. Yeah, those are great to have. A lot of stuff that they, you know, the dialoguing of some of those records is like, wow, they really, because we're in a PC culture now. But even if you look at those old Sesame Street episodes from like the 70s, and it's like, wow, they never would have been able to do that now. Good grief.
Yeah, there's stuff that, like, okay, because she's 13 now, so she still watches like cartoons and stuff like that. But especially when she was smaller, and we'd be like, oh, this is what we used to watch. Let's watch it with her. And we would watch things, and we'd be like, this would never fly today.
If you watch All Dogs Go to Heaven, the very beginning of that.
Oh, really?
Yeah, whenever you have time, watch All Dogs Go to Heaven, watch the first scene. And they're just smoking cigars.
And there's gambling. Guns. Which is whatever, but we're like just now, like living in the now, and you watch it, you're like, yeah, this would never fly. Like, they would never make this now.
Well, you know those Disney, like the classic Disney movies, like 101 Dalmatians and Jungle Book? Those are the most violent movies. Now, we're not talking graphic. We're not talking, you know, Goodfellas or things like that, but
Joe Pesci's Cruella,
made for like children. It's
it's just like Bambi. It's like the child abandonment and stuff like that. It's just these are
pretty dark. Yeah, they're pretty.
Yeah, they're darker matter. Movies. Uh-huh. Yeah,
yeah, yeah, and yeah, it's unbelievable, unbelievable.
You're like what they got away with. I'm just kidding, but no, I we like the old stuff too, like movies and stuff like that, and we show them to her, and like obviously you gotta filter some things, but I feel like she can still enjoy things like that. Like even this guy, poor Andrew, like there was a lot of things he didn't watch, or like he barely just watch Nightmare on Elm Street.
Really?
Like literally this past Halloween.
Okay, are you into horror at all? Were you?
So the biggest issue was like with my childhood is like my mom was like, "That's just gooey. That's too scary for my kids."
I've heard that term before. I came up in South Beach, so yeah. Anytime my Latino friends get in trouble, it's like, oh yeah, I know that word. Ooh, it's like, dude, we gotta get out of here. You're in trouble. Your mom is screaming from the kitchen. We gotta go, dude. I heard something.
Yeah, so you know, that's just one of those things. Like, they're just like, you know, not about that culture. But as I get, you know, my cousin is really into like the you know, the horror country and the horror thing. And Drea, her family is. So it's kind of like a thing I have to like take in and like, you know. You know, I watched Nightmare on Elm Street, and I could see how it would be terrifying in the 80s. Mm-hmm. And, you know, me watching it now, I'm like, this isn't scary at all.
Yeah.
But I can see how, like, with the way they did it with the cinematography and stuff, how it could be really scary in a different setting.
Well, and how they set up the scenes, like, you know, just anything in, like, a film or whatever, how there's things that are influenced by the way they dress. Like, they're setting things up, they're setting the vibe, they're setting the move with the music, yeah. Whatever. Yeah. But yeah, it was funny too because tell about the Johnny Depp thing.
So it said featuring Johnny Depp, and I was just like sitting there. And I was like, "Where is this dude?" I'm like, and then I seen him. Like, oh wait, that's him, dude. What am I doing?
This is at the end of the movie, and I was like, "Did you expect Jack Sparrow?" To just I mean, I just, on the set?
I was just
he's
all
got
over.
That little outfit on, the parrot on his shoulder. Freddy's coming to get us, boy.
So that's just one of those things, you know. Yeah, that was just really behind on.
I was always amazed at certain movies that people have not seen, and I used to be that guy. You've never seen? I don't do that anymore, you know. Because I'll be honest with you, as much as I love the music, I love the composer, I have never seen Star Wars.
Oh,
never seen it. I'm not a big fan of sci-fi fantasy. I'm not a big fan of it. If I do watch sci-fi, I like a horror element to it, kind of like Alien or Event Horizon or something like that. But yeah, I do have some Star Wars vinyl. Oh, there we go, VHS.
We'll take a picture of that for you guys. Coco has Star Wars. He's going to put it on right now for Julian to watch it.
Mm-hmm. You're at Grand Avenue Records. What do you expect?
That's right, Grand Avenue Records. We just finished watching Car Wash, one of the greatest movies of 1976.
On VHS. So
that's right.
Coco just got his setup and with the help of Julian to get a old TV and VCR functioning.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah, looks fantastic. I brought some Neil Carter DVDs, too, in case you want to pop that in.
Are there any current record stores that you go to that you feel like they have, like, I know you're saying, because it's true, like, doesn't people ask us all the time, too, like, where do you buy records from? I'm like, well, record store isn't just wherever, like, you'll be surprised if you walk into, like, a secondhand store or whatever, and or even antique malls, mm-hmm. stuff like that, wherever, you can be surprised what you find in there.
Yeah.
Is there any particular, like, record store, though, here that you like, that you're really fond of?
Well, there was a new store that came up about a year ago called Grace Records, and they're in Gilbert. It's a very small store. I found a few goodies there. The people there are so nice. They are just extremely nice. And you walk in, hi, how you doing? And they're very friendly. And I found a few good things there. But it's a nice little place. And they're just extremely nice. It's warm. They're very welcoming people there. But I found a few good items there. It's very interesting. Alphabetically, they have their $3 album section, but the alphabet is backwards. So you're going Z, Y, X, and it's just backwards for some reason. I've never asked them why they did it. I'm sure they're going to have an answer for it, but I don't care. I'm just saying.
We should have. Well, we actually interviewed the owner of Grace Records a few weeks back.
Okay.
I think you're right. Yeah.
Yeah, it was about 3 or 4.
We should have asked him that, so we dropped the ball on that one. We should have been like, Julian, what should we ask?
Okay. Maybe I'm dyslexic, and maybe they have it on ABC. But
yeah, maybe it's just me.
Yeah.
But no, that is true. Now that you bring it up, that's totally true.
Yeah. Have you ever picked up an album, take it home, and the wrong record's inside?
Yes.
That happened when I bought a 12 at Zia Thunderbird. This was at the beginning of this year or the end of last year or something. I don't know. It was sometime. I was buying If I Ruled the World by Nas.
Oh.
But and somebody switched it out and put some random like Engelbert Humperdinck or something. In there.
That's right. Humperdinck is his last name. That's him.
We're not swearing at all. That is his We're last not name. Swearing.
And by the way, if we were 7-year-olds, we'd be on the floor laughing. Humperdinck.
But
you know, yeah, we've seen many of his 45s digging through 45s.
Oh, or
yeah.
Al Martino.
Anything on the Parrot label, I just want to just set on fire because that's just the worst. It's just like Parrot label. Now I was in San Francisco like 3 years ago, and I just happened to walk into a Goodwill, and this was the coolest thing. There were some Prince albums. I think one was like the self-titled Prince album with the blue cover and his like feathered hair, kind of like Farrah Fawcett. There were like two of them, and there were Prince 45s inside the LPs. And I was like, I couldn't stop laughing because I'm like, did somebody put this here for me? Because I'm buying all this shit.
But did you, when you bought it, did you leave the 45s inside the
You
sleeve?
Damn skippy,
I did. Yeah, it was meant to out. Be.
Those were bonuses.
Bonus records.
They come with the LP.
Hey, that was a long walk, too. It's worth it.
So, do you strictly buy just through digging, or, you know, since you have so many records and you probably pretty much have a lot of stuff, or do you use Discogs to purchase as well?
Yeah, I go to Discogs. I'll go to eBay. Sometimes if you even search on Amazon, you'll see something that you may cost $30 on Discogs for $7. So yeah, I'll buy that there. There's most places I'm not going to that site, but yeah, whatever's economical, you know.
Well, because there's some people who only, like, well, you know, I have to dig to find the record. Some people only shop online. Because we do both. We, you know, sometimes we like to go out there and dig and try to find different things, but sometimes we just can't find what we're looking for. So what we'll do is go buy it, because that's the only other option. So it's always nice to hear someone who has purchased so many records, who owns as many as you do, to see what they actually, how they go about purchasing new records.
And, you know, buying online, I did not used to do that, buying LPs and records and vinyl online. I wasn't always into that. I was like, well, if I can't get it at the store, I'll special order it. Well, if I can't special order it, well, God didn't want me to have this record anyway. Well, I thank you. Morgan Freeman. Well, yes. I figured I'd buy this record somewhere else.
You know, it's not meant to be.
It just wasn't meant to be, and I wish I could tell you differently.
Did you ever work at any of the stores here in the Valley?
Let's see. Back in the early 90s, I worked at a place called The Warehouse.
Oh, I remember The Warehouse. Right. Remember
which was turned into FYE.
Yeah.
I did a brief stint at Tower Records in the early 90s.
Was it the Crosstown Tower Records? There, that one?
Or? No, it was. But I love that one. That was a great one. That's where I picked up the Cocteau Twins' Bluebell Knoll back in 89. That was a fun bus ride back. I was like, I got it. No, because NPR, they were talking about the Cocteau Twins, and a couple of days later, they played one of their, this was back when NPR would do news, and they play a song. And then I heard a song, and I was like, I bet that's the Cocteau Twins. And they were like, that's right, that's the Cocteau Twins. It's like, why is the radio talking back to me? But yeah, that's where I picked that up. Prince was a big Cocteau Twins fan, from what I read. But 40th Street and Thomas, that was the tower.
What's right there now? I'm trying to think. 40th Street and
Peter
Thomas.
Piper Pizza, I believe.
Dude, what's up with Peter Piper Pizza being where old record stores used to be?
I know. You walk in.
And it used to be Pistol Pete's, remember?
Or something like that, yeah.
Yeah, it was Pistol Pete's.
I'm always wary of places that come up that used to be something else. It's like this place that used to be a Whataburger. Now it's like a tax returns place.
Yeah, they have a lot of the title loan places. Yeah, yeah.
But some of the iconic figure work is still there. It's like a burger. It's like it's just...
The old Taco Bells especially have a lot of them. I noticed, like, I'll pass them. Like, that used to be a Taco Bell. I can tell.
It's all orange and white inside for the Whataburger.
Yeah.
Like, why is it orange and white? It just so happens to be the color scheme of a Whataburger.
I don't know. You walk in there trying to get a tax refund. It's like it still smells like taco meat and cheese.
Well, like, he used to work at the Mercedes dealership that was on, where was it?
Right there on 3rd Avenue Indian School.
No, and you say you laugh because when you pass by.
So, like, they were, like, you know, the salesmen and stuff used to be, like, you know, in that office. They kept everything, like, intact.
Really?
Yeah, so, like, if you look in there, you can see a gigantic Mercedes logo and stuff like that.
But it's an apartment.
But it's an apartment complex. And so, like, they, like, you know, instead of, you know, keep it real high class and use, like, all their older, like, furniture and stuff. So I'm like, that looks so cheesy.
Like, I used to stand right in that office.
I used to see that thing every day. Get that thing out of there. What the hell's wrong with you? But, you know, I guess, you know, well, we're just repurposing it, but I guess that's something. That's
no, you're not. You're just lazy. Just be honest.
Yeah, we're repurposing this building. Yeah, whatever. That used to be a repair facility. Now it's just apartments, high end apartments.
Wow.
I mean, that's just Phoenix now. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, that's just the way it is.
Some things will never change. Hi, welcome to Grand Avenue Records.
Hello.
Hi.
So, just out of curiosity, so do you actually have all your collection cataloged or no?
I have a basic A to Z. And then after that, soundtracks, comedy, children's albums, dance music compilations and whatnot. Things like, you know, the K-Tel records and stuff like that. I have had sectioned off like that. And then I have my re-edits. I have that at a top shelf part. And current playouts, current records that I play when I go out and gigging. And then I have a couple of cases that I carry, just stuff in there that I keep in my cases, things like that. I haven't even got to the 45s, which I'm still trying to work through.
So how many 45s do you think you have?
I don't know.
Countless.
I don't know. I not a lot. Not a lot. I would say maybe under 200. Yeah, under 200. Yeah.
So...
And let's not even talk about the CDs, because I went nuts on the CDs.
So when CDs came out, how did you feel about that? Were you like, this is awesome?
I was like, this is great. Purple Rain? What? $28? Are you crazy?
The sound quality. I mean, CDs also obviously have the best sound quality. Yeah. Still to this day, I think they have some of the best sound quality.
Oh, yeah.
I mean...
I'm not going to lie. I've been, like, when I go, because we'll go to, like, their stores looking for records, but then I notice the CDs are so cheap. I'm starting to look at them and be like... Oh, it's convenient because I have a CD player in my car. Yeah. So I'm like, and sometimes I just hate dealing with the phone. Like, it just, I don't know. I just don't want to touch my phone. I want to deal with it. So I've been actually rebuying CDs at like 25 cents or $1.
Me too. It's just like, what? McCartney Wingspan, a double CD for a buck? Yeah, I can dig that.
Yeah,
I can dig that.
Can't say no. So I actually bought like five CDs yesterday. Yeah.
And then you might find something that's out of print because not everything on CD is available. Because, like, you know, the Prince, the Black Album, that's not available on CD anymore. He has a couple of CDs that you can't find anymore. A lot of Prince offshoot stuff, you know, you can't get anymore. So there is a lot of stuff that you can find at, you know, different thrift stores. There was something I wanted to mention, and I forgot about it. We're talking about record stores that I used to work at.
Yes.
Virgin Megastore.
Oh, you worked there?
The one at Arizona Mills?
The only one. Yeah. At Arizona Mills. I worked there from 1998 to 2008. And that was amazing. I started from the sales floor, worked my way up to buyer and then processing manager. And that was just a phenomenal, phenomenal place. It's you know, on any given day, you might see Mike Tyson walk in, you know, just start pulling CDs and get armfuls. And he was just a friendly guy. He was just a really friendly dude. And, you know, a lot of famous people would come through.
I mean, I remember going to that one. I mean, we were obviously from the West Side, so going to Arizona Mills. But going in there, it was just overwhelming because they had so much music.
It is, yeah.
It was like the, obviously that's the only kind, I guess you could say, equivalent that we had to Amoeba, like Hollywood.
Yes.
But then they closed it down, and I was sad. Now it's a Forever 21.
Yeah, because when did it close again? When did the Virgin Megastore close?
They closed in early 2009. I believe it was February.
So not soon after you left, basically.
Yeah. Well, it just fell apart. I mean, you know, how could you blame them, you know?
Well, I remember. Well, I remember like seeing on TV the big Virgin Megastore that was in New York. Uh-huh. So then when I heard we were getting one, I was like, oh my god, I'm so excited! I wanted to go there. So eventually, I went there, and I thought it was just so cool because, like he was saying, it was just so vast and huge, and there's just like so many things in there.
Yeah,
it was just like, wow. So did you? So how was it from being like buying records, like being a consumer versus actually working at a record store? What do you think there's any misconceptions people have that they don't really understand? Like some people, they'll complain about like oh, this record's so expensive now. It's like, I used to get it for this much, and now it's this much. Like, people just don't, do you think, understand, like, supply and demand, or?
I think when you're on the other side of that, you see what things cost, and you have to see how you're going to make a profit if you price it this way. So, yeah, I would be that way, too. It's like, why does this cost so much? But, yeah, you know, being a buyer and being a processing manager, you kind of see the ins and outs of, you know, why things cost this way and price margins and things like that, especially the import CDs, which are kind of pricey, but a lot of those are really rare. And, you know, you really get to see who's buying what. You get to see who's into certain things, and you kind of look at things franchise-wise, you know, which store is selling this and which store is selling that. And it's an interesting thing. It was a lot of fun.
And you said it was 98 to 2008 that you worked there.
98 to 2008.
So you saw the whole, like, the height of, like, that late 90s, early 2000s boy band craze, right? Mm-hmm. You went through that. So did you guys actually sell a lot of, like, boy band stuff?
Tons and tons. New release days were on Tuesday at the time. And the two things that stand out as far as new release days was, I believe it was NSYNC. What's the one?
No Strings Attached.
No Strings Attached with the...
Yeah, because I bought that.
Dirty Pop?
Yeah. Oh, no. That was Celebrity. So, No Strings Attached. It was NSYNC self-titled. Then there was No Strings Attached. Then it was, I believe, Celebrity. Because they didn't have that many albums. And then Justin went off and did his own thing.
Oh, okay.
Then Backstreet Boys. I didn't really care for Backstreet Boys. But they had Backstreet Boys self-titled. Mm. Then they had Millennium, uh-huh, which has I Want It That Way, and then they had their stuff after that. I don't know.
Yeah, that release day, that was amazing. Britney Spears, Oops, I Did It Again, that was a huge day. Eminem, the I'm Sam Day, I Want
It Again. Yeah.
For weeks and weeks, because the song dropped weeks before the release, and people would come in, you got that new Eminem? That the new Eminem? And so it was such a huge build-up. I think that was just an amazing day, just to see people come in, and we sold tons and tons of that. And 50 Cent, with the It's Your Birthday in the club.
Get Rich or Die Trying.
This one brother would come in and say, hey, man, y'all got the new 50 Cent? I got the new 50 Cent? The new 50 Cent? Nah, man.
Not yet.
Comes out May 23rd. That's a month from now. All right, man, I got it. Next morning. Y'all got the new 50 Cent?
You're like, May 23rd. So do you feel like there's a difference now? So since you worked, like you're saying, you worked back then and you saw the... Okay, so back then it was like a real build-up to... Mm-hmm. Even way back in the day, but especially then, like, I felt like record companies could still control releases and really leave you waiting and wanting to listen, but things are so quick now, so... Do you prefer it like that, where it's more you have to wait for the artist to release something, or do you think, like, because I feel like sometimes kids are a little, I hate to say that, it makes me sound like I'm an old person and I'm just like, nah, get off my lawn, but I feel like they're impatient now. Like someone, when like Kendrick Lamar released Damn and it was like a month old and someone was talking about it, they're like, that's old, and they're like, it's only a month old, like, mm-hmm, how do you truly appreciate it if you're not like listening to it in a sense and like really taking it in?
Yeah, I prefer the older way where people would have to wait, where radio would play, you know, a song from the forthcoming Prince album, and that was such an event back in the 80s and early 90s when Prince would come out with a new album. That was an event. It was like, man, the new Prince, or, you know, something like that. But yeah, I personally prefer a hard copy. You know, I want to actually, you know, it takes effort to go and pick up a CD rather than, oh, I get it on my phone. And sometimes you don't even.
You forget.
A lot of people will not pay for them online.
Do you use any streaming services to listen to music?
No, I don't.
Nothing.
I use iTunes once in a while if I'm looking for a certain, you know, old jazz album. But I don't do any streaming. I just don't. I prefer to have hard copy, personally. I do. But YouTube is great because I can sample certain albums that have previously been released, like, you know, like a Miles Davis album, you know, Nefertiti. That's where I first heard it, and I went out and I actually picked up the CD of it.
Yeah, I went out and actually got it.
But YouTube is a good reference tool. to
hear
stuff.
There's so much on YouTube that is nowhere else. I noticed that. Yeah.
But you got to sift through a lot of garbage. You really do. You think you're looking up something, and it's actually...
When they trick you?
Mm-hmm.
I hate that. I'm like, I know this is not what I was looking for. Why are you doing this to me?
I was like, this is a... Oh, yeah, this is one Prince song. It's like, yeah, listen... And then you pull it up, and it's like, oh, this is a fan's reaction to listening to the
Prince
song.
Oh, my God. And there's so many of those. It's like, how many do you really need to put out there, people? The fan's reaction.
I wish they would stop, yeah. So.
So something you posted the other day, I was going to ask you about. You posted some lowrider compilations you found.
Oh, yeah.
But have you just had those for years, or did you just recently find
them? I just picked those up.
Really?
He's jealous.
I just picked those up.
That's his way of saying he's jealous.
Yeah. Damn. Where the hell did you find those?
Yeah, I just picked those up. I had them all on CD. I bought those back in the 90s, and I used to love those collections because at that time, a lot of those records were long out of print. You couldn't get those certain songs on CD. But, I just came across those old school series. And the CDs were great because the CDs, they had a great sound. They were mastered really well.
My mom would buy those CDs, and my mom would buy all kinds of stuff, but she was always real picky about what CD she would buy because she felt like they were kind of expensive. But of course, she had like Prince because my mom was a huge Prince fan, or is a huge Prince fan, and she'd buy those old school compilations. Did you ever have any of the East Side Story compilations?
Yes.
Do you have those?
Yes, I have a few of those. Yeah.
Okay, cool.
They reissued those on vinyl now.
But you see the controversy on that?
No.
So, okay. So the records have the track list, have a certain track listing, but then the tapes mirror the records, but the CDs don't mirror the tapes and the records. So the records that are repressed right now or reissued, whatever, they reflect the CD, not the original record pressings.
Whoa.
So some people are like, oh, this is stupid, I don't want this. And I'm just like, if you like
this
it,
isn't a true OG.
This
repress.
Isn't a true East Side Story. So some people are all like hard up about it, but
I did not know that.
Well, there you go.
I got the CDs at Megastore. You know, the great thing about working at places like Virgin Megastore, when I became a buyer, I got a lot of freebies. A lot of the label reps would come in and bring you the latest CDs or vinyl and stuff. And somebody, I don't know what East Side Story, I don't know what label they were under, but she brought in the whole 12 CD set for me. Because I just asked her for it. I knew it was coming out, and she just brought it for me. Just all 12 CDs. So it was fascinating.
So you still have that?
Yeah,
still that's
have
cool.
I don't get rid of
music.
I don't really know. Once in a while, I might get rid of something else, but I hold on to my CDs. Most of my CDs, I have it in my terabyte. I have a 4 terabyte drive, so I'll just rip the CD there and put it and box them up as they go. So I have like eight or nine boxes in my storage trailer of CDs. I don't throw away nothing. Because what if CDs come back?
Again, that fidelity of that sound, you can't replicate it because obviously any type of iTunes, MP3s, they're all compressed music. Yeah. So, even with this podcast, I mean, we just talked about it with somebody that, I converted to an MP3 because it's a smaller file because this is recorded in Wave.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, well, does it change the sound? I'm like, no, because it's just, voice. But if it was like, maybe if we had like super duper high-end microphones, it might change the sound of it. Uh-huh. But, that's just kind of, you have to stay with the times. MP3 is the only way to do things pretty much nowadays, unfortunately. Because even like on our host site, the file's too big, which I don't really understand.
Uh-huh.
So that's why you have to convert it to MP3.
Yeah, so I have to convert to MP3.
So it can be smaller and you compress it.
So you're blocking the TV, by the way. I can't see C-3PO or nothing.
He's like, I still have not seen Star Wars because you're blocking the damn TV.
Right.
On that note. Get the hell out of the way. I'm trying to watch this Millennium Falcon.
I want to see Princess Leia.
Not really. I don't.
He's like, I actually don't care about Star Wars.
I'll be honest with you, because through the years, due to all of the different TV parodies and Mad Magazine and things like that, I pretty much know what Star Wars is about. I pretty much get it. But I tell you what I do love. I love the Star Wars Holiday Special. That is the best.
Oh, yes, yes, yes.
That is the best. Someone gave me a DVD. It's the Star Wars Hollywood Holiday Special, but it was the original from TV with the commercials at the time.
Oh, my gosh. That's okay. So remember I was telling you about the beta before we started the podcast? Okay.
Uh-huh.
So my my grandma, basically my abuelita, she had recorded on a beta cassette, on a beta tape.
Uh-huh.
It was like 1980 something, I don't know, but it was, you know how they always play the Wizard of Oz on Thanksgiving?
Uh-huh.
So it was a recorded bootleg of the Wizard of Oz, but it was on Channel 5.
Uh-huh.
So even now to this day, when I watch the Wizard of Oz, I still can picture, after certain scenes, I know what commercials are supposed to be played.
Wow.
And like, and stuff like that. And I, that tape is long gone now, but for years, that's how I watch it. So that's how I know it. Like, I remember one of the commercials that I used to love was, and people were like, how do you remember this commercial? Because of that tape, because I would obsessively watch it. It was when they were doing the McDonald's campaign, the Do the Arches, that one. Do you remember that? And then like when they had the McDonald's with the Moon Man. Or,
oh, no, that I remember. That's Mac Tonight.
Mac Tonight. Yeah. And you know who the act, you know who Doug Jones is? He's like a Doug Jones. He was Abe Sapien in Hellboy and stuff like that. Well, he's kind of like an underground known like character actor.
Mm-hmm.
So Doug Jones' first job was being doing the Mac Tonight,
Mac
Daddy.
Tonight.
That was his first job ever.
I do remember that commercial. It's Mac Tonight.
Yes.
Dinner at McDonald's.
And then there's the Campbell's Soup commercial. I remember where there was a little girl and she's figure skating and like,
oh yeah.
And she's like goes home and she's like, oh, Campbell's Soup, and she's all eating. Like, but there's so many of those things that I remember, like just from watching that stinking thing because I watched it on a bootleg tape.
Well, what I had a brief stint of going to pawn shops and thrift stores and trying to find videotapes, not pre-recorded stuff, but videotapes that say, you know, like TDK and, you know, such and such a movie. I'd find those, take those home, play them, see if they had the commercials in between them. If they were from the late 70s and early 80s, that'd be great. But I would compile the commercials, and then I put together a videotape of commercials from 1978 to 1983. So there are 2 hours of all these old commercials, like locals car dealerships from like Illinois and stuff like that. And I play them at parties, and people be like, look, that's the 1978 Corolla. Only $28.98. And they were like, damn, I could have bought three of those now.
That's so interesting, though, that you did that. Is that what you would use, like, when you DJ and, you know, you play the projections?
I would take them to a party at the time, and people would be like, whoa, what is this? What is this? This is crazy. And then once in a while, you'd be like, you'd see a Channel 5 commercial or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, those I have that on DVD now, so
that's cool. You put it on DVD?
Yeah, I got to dig that out.
That's interesting.
I'll have to make you a copy.
Yeah, I would love to see that. I love to see stuff like that. Like it's just interesting to me.
Yeah, it really is. Just to see like how much stereos cost back in the day, and these you know, Thousand Island dressing commercials, and these little shaving products, and kind of beers that don't exist anymore. That's a lot of fun to look back on that in a nostalgic way.
Andrew has his hat backwards right now because he knows that I don't like it.
No, I have a hat backwards because the sun's like beaming on my back and it's burning my neck. Because
I tell him he looks like it's Kevin James. I don't like that.
Yeah. Oh, you're not a fan of Kevin James?
I don't care. I just can't stand to see his hat backwards. I don't know why. I just feel like I don't like it.
She says it doesn't suit me. And I agree completely. I'm just
like,
wearing it
because he kept looking at me and I'm like, oh, he wants me acknowledging.
No, I'm strictly wearing it to keep the sun off my neck. Jeez Louise.
So but yeah, I guess I don't know, this has been really great conversation. Thank you for your time. I really appreciate it, Julian.
Oh, well, thank you. You know, I would like to think that this is rather interesting, and if I offended anybody or I really embarrassed myself today.
No, not at all.
Saying a lot of things that I'm probably going to regret.
No,
you're going to get thrown back at me.
So, and just so I know, your band was called The Fourth Phase, right?
Why are you asking
that? Because I want to actively look for the record.
Because I'm going to look for it.
Yeah, that's it. The Fourth Phase. Well, there's no THE, it's just Fourth Phase.
Fourth Phase?
Yeah.
And where did the name come from? You don't remember.
Our so-called lead singer came up with it. He was talking about the different stages of life, like birth and, you know, your life and living and life.
You're always the 80s, though.
Yeah. That's the story of the fourth phase, doing their things, and I wish I could tell you.
That's easy. That's how you do Morgan Freeman. You start up high and then you go down low. And that's the end of the sentence. You say something and you go profound and then you go real low, and that's pretty much it.
I guess before we go, actually, is there anything actually brand new that you're listening to right now that actually, like, you really like or captures your interest?
There is something that I captured on my phone while I was in San Francisco, and the Uber driver was playing it, and I probably can't pull it up now, but she was a kind of a neo R&B soul type singer, and it sounded really good. It was really good production. It was kind of laid back, kind of hip-hop-ish. But it was really, really, really good.
So what do you think? It was like a local San Francisco thing, or it's something that's bubbling under and it's going to come up?
Here we go. Snow Allegra, S-N-O-H, and the last name is A-A-L-E-G-R-A. Snow Allegra.
Oh, okay. I'm going to have to look that up.
It was sounding really good. And there's a thing, when I'm in you know, a Lyft or an Uber, I don't talk to the driver. I just let him do his thing, let him play his music and whatever, you know, and I just Shazam whatever. You hear a lot of great music, and some of these Lyft drivers, they are just amazing.
Well, they play like some amazing. They like to set the mood or like the ambiance because they want to get the...
Yeah, and I had a driver who was playing some really good rare disco and soul stuff, and we had a really good conversation going. After a while, he was like, okay, have you heard this song? Because you remember this song? And then we were like, hey, drive around the airport some more, man. I'm digging this, man. This is great.
So, yo, send me your playlist.
It's just, you just never know who's into what. And I mean, he was just a Lyft driver. And I never would have known that he was really into this type of disco and soul and funk. It was just amazing. Just amazing. People are unbelievable.
And is there anything you want to say to people? Because, like, a lot of people are into right now sharing music because, you know, like you said, vinyl's back or made a resurgence or whatever, how you want to call it. Is there anything that you would tell people out there? Because, like, the number one thing that I always hear is basically just to play what you like.
Yeah.
Is that what you would say?
Absolutely. Play what you like. Play what you know. That's pretty much it. I couldn't expound on that. You know, you got to find your way. Find your way with your own things that you like and things that bring you joy. Because, you know, in the times that we're living now, you got to find something. Something that's going to enrich your spirit and kind of heal your soul. And music does that. Music really does that. I think that's what really connects most of the universe is people that really enjoy music. I think music is definitely a healer. Different types of stuff. It's no particular genre or subgenre. And it's also good to create music. I mean, if one has a creative vibe or something, it's now easier than ever to put something together, put a little melody, a few notes, a few beats. So it's really, it helps to have some kind of skill, you know, some kind of know-how, but not a whole lot.
Just have fun, basically.
Yeah,
right?
Basically, just to have fun. Most of the biggest legendary, iconic hits, you know, came out of flukes, you know. So,
on like iconic hits, do you have a grail that you don't own yet?
Do I have a what now?
A grail, like a record that you would consider something that you just cannot get your hands on. Not that you're not willing to.
You just haven't.
Yeah, or you haven't. Not, or you haven't pulled the trigger to buy it because it's so expensive or something like that.
No, because I'm what's known as a cheap ass. No, because I always think like this, especially when it comes to hearing a song that I've heard years ago and not knowing who it is. I always think to myself, eventually, it's going to make its way to me in some shape or form. So if I do see something that's really pricey or expensive or maybe out of reach at the time, I'm like, eventually, I'm going to have that. And it might be a little cheaper because I'm going to steal it. No, I can't really think of anything right now that I want. There are a lot of things that I kind of have my eye on, but I can't really think of anything that I would consider a grail.
In particular, nothing?
In particular, no. So many things are getting reissued, and I'm not one to say, well, I need the OG pressing of that. you know, I need that $90 one. Nope, because if it got reissued at 15, I'm taking the 15.
Yeah. That's us too. There's a lot of stuff that we want, especially on 45, that's just getting reissued, and we're like, cool, I'll take the $10 to $15 copy over paying like $200. Like, and if people do want to pay the $200, I mean, good for them. I don't care, but
good on you.
But I rather save the money.
Yeah. To buy more records.
Yes, exactly.
And some Campbell's soup, too.
Yeah. And we go to McDonald's with Mac tonight.
McDonald's dinner at McDonald's. It's Mac tonight. Yeah, let's
do that. That's good. Okay, well, like we said, thank you so much, Julian. I appreciate it. I liked the history lesson that you gave us, and that's exactly why we started the podcast, was to get content like that so people can understand about some of the culture that's here, because being born and raised here and meeting so many people that aren't from here, the number one thing I always hear is, you guys don't have no culture, you guys don't have no this. I'm like, we do, but you just were not part of it at the time. And I mean, I understand there's other things that go into it, like, yeah, you know, but you know, we're, Phoenix is definitely its own place, its own unique place, and I don't know, we have a lot to offer. I think that's why everybody moves here.
Is that what you hear? You kind of hand on come?
Yeah, that's what I hear all the time, that we don't have no culture. Or where I'm from, it's like this, and you guys don't have
that. They always run that. It's, I'm from back east, and I...
Or I'm from, you know, here, and I'm just like, and that's cool. But I always tell people, too, then, if you want to see that here, then why don't you do something about it, then? Don't just sit here and complain. Like, actively do something, whether it's you do it yourself, or you give the idea to someone else to execute it. Like, you know, just do something. Mm-hmm. Stop being mad.
And you're 19. Don't tell me about...
Oh my gosh, have you ever had someone, just out of curiosity, like try to school you, like, and I'm sure you don't even care, but like someone that doesn't really know, like, how long you've actually, that it's been a lifelong thing, passion for you, like music and records, and they try to tell you something, you're just like, okay, like, I'm not gonna correct you, but all right, whatever.
Yeah, I do that a lot. I'd never boast or brag or anything like that. I'm just like, okay, yeah, that's nice, wow, amazing. Unbelievable. Get out of here. What?
You're like, okay. Yeah, I know people say that it happens online a lot. There's all these weirdos online that, like, think that they're of a certain caliber because they only buy expensive records, or the opposite, or whatever. But it's like, to me, like we always say, it's like, just enjoy the music. That's really what it's supposed to be about, yeah, right? The freaking music, right? So don't sit here and, you know, brag this and that. I mean, it's cool if you do, like, you know, if I find a dollar record and it's worth a lot of money, yeah, I get excited, obviously. Mm-hmm. But it's like, at the end of the day, I'm buying that record not because it was necessarily worth a lot of money, because I've seen things where I'm like, oh, it's probably worth money. Uh-huh. But, like, I'm not really a reseller, so I'll maybe tell somebody else it's there, or, like, maybe I'll pick it up and give it to somebody else. Uh-huh. But I don't buy records based off of value. I buy based off what I like.
What I do, if I see something that I already own, I might pick it up, because I have doubles and triples.
I'm sure you have duplicates.
But I have no problem giving one of those away to somebody who might want them. I do it all the time. I'm like, oh, you like that song? Here, I got an extra one. I got a double if you want it. You know, my friend Rob Santos, who DJs with Coco at Loose Joints, you know, I've given him two or three different things that I've had, doubles that he wanted. You know, some pricey, some not so, but yeah. But by the way, this is what I get from a lot of people. Say, nah, Junior, you might be a little young to remember. No, dude. I do remember. Yes.
I was there.
That's it.
Well, you do kind of, you know, you look younger. You don't look, I mean, and people your age don't look old, but you don't, you know, you don't look as seasoned as your age would say you are. So that's probably why sometimes you probably get that.
You know, my first concert?
What was it?
I was 4 years old. Phoenix Memorial Coliseum, Al Green, and Marvin Gaye. That was my first concert.
I'm jealous.
I don't remember any of it.
But you're like, that was
I was
first
there.
Concert.
But I know I was there. And I know my older sister, she got a little overwhelmed by the noise, and so we had to leave early. But yeah, Al Green and Marvin Gaye.
Aww.
No better concert than that.
I know my mom, when she went into labor with me, she was at a concert.
What?
My mom, she's always loved music. Like, she was into records, obviously, because my mom was born in 66.
Uh-huh.
So I'm like, you guys probably crossed paths maybe at some point in time, because she's, she moved here when she was 13, but she was born in Tucson. But she's big Prince fan, and like was always liked to be, my mom just liked to have a good time, I guess you could say.
Yeah, my sister was born in 67.
Oh, okay. Yes. So what high school did you go to?
I went to St. Mary's my first 2 years, and then I went to South Mountain For my last 2 years. Now, so I went to private school for up until I was a sophomore.
Oh, cool.
So the last 2 years I went to South Mountain High School.
Was that an adjustment?
That was a game changer. I was like, we can do what? We don't have to do that.
Aww.
Yeah, that was fun. That was quite an experience.
Yeah, my mom didn't even finish high school, but the high school that she did end up going to, she went to West High and she went to Phoenix Union.
Oh, Phoenix Union, okay.
Yeah, so my mom used to hang out a lot in Central Phoenix and stuff like that because that's where her schools are at. So my mom has tons of stories of all the parties. My mom loved to have a good time.
Yeah. Awesome.
Yeah, things like that. So, but that's interesting. Like I said, I'm glad, I don't know, I'm glad you're born and raised here. That just makes me happy.
Yeah, that's great. I had a great upbringing. It was a lot of fun. It was multicultural. You know, South Phoenix is has a huge Latino population, and I've always had a you know, heartfelt love for my Latino brothers and sisters. So it's definitely a natural thing, you know. Yep, good time.
Well, thank you very much. And do you have any other questions?
No, I'm good, man. I mean, like Jerry said, I really appreciate you coming on the show, on the podcast, actually, and hanging out with us.
Yeah, I'm shocked that you actually would want to talk to me. I'm like, why?
People always say that. I'm,
you know,
like,
what it is that we would like to take everybody who's interested in just music and collecting, or you said you're not a collector, who just purchases, and it's about the music, and to hear different stories about Arizona and how different perspectives. Like you said, you're from the south side, someone from the west side could have a completely different perspective. And, you know, that's what it's all about. Yeah. And the different time periods, because obviously, you know, we're old, we're in our 30s, but you have lived life longer than us. You were a teenager in a different time period than us, so things were different.
Mm-hmm.
So there's times where we missed out on collecting and things like that because it may not have been a huge part in our, I mean, like in my family, we collected records and stuff, but, you know, my dad got on the CD train and we stopped collecting records. That's just the way music worked.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, so just talking to anybody, just we always like to talk to different people and just see different people's perspectives.
Mm-hmm.
And then the feedback that we get when people do listen and they're like, oh, I didn't know that, or that's interesting to know, or we've done episodes on different people and they're like, I didn't know that about that person, and that, like, I don't know, it makes people happy to hear everybody's stories. So that's why, like I said, being from here, that's kind of the point of the podcast, is collect stories from around here. And you don't have to be born and raised here, but it's just to, like I said, to document it, because there's a lot of stuff in Phoenix that has not been documented. I feel like there's a lot of lack of documentation.
Absolutely.
So that's kind of was the point of the podcast.
Yeah.
So you're a part of that puzzle.
I think the highlight of the podcast was my story about Zia Records walking in and them taking off, putting on rap music.
I that still can't believe they did.
That's what happened.
Yeah, I lived it. I was there. Well, thank you. Like we said, thank you so much. Time is the most valuable thing you have, and you took the time out today. So we greatly appreciate you, Julian. Thank you to Grand Avenue, for Coco, for opening his doors and letting us sit here and watch Car Wash and Star Wars.
I'm not watching Star Wars.
Watch Car Wash and non-watch Star Wars.
You played the soundtrack. That's great. I love John Williams. He's my hero.
I'll talk to you about that, but not about the movie. Or the Christmas special. You're like, I'll talk about that.
Yeah.
And is there anything you want to say to people on podcast land, Julian?
No, just keep on rocking, and that's about it. I really enjoyed this. I really don't have much else to say.
And do you ever play anywhere that's not Loose Joints? Because I know sometimes you'll play at Loose Joints.
Occasionally, I will play Bikini Lounge with Alex, who is de-gentrification, and different spots. I was a resident DJ at Newtown, and DJ Jesse Frank, he's over there, and once in a while he'll have me as a guest over there, so that's always a good time. He's a great disco funk DJ over there, and he's doing a fine job. And of course, once in a while I'll pop up at Loose Joints Valley Bar, thanks to Coco and Santos, and they're always very generous and putting me on. So yeah
we've seen you play there, so
yeah.
Go check out, we always tell people, go check out Loose Joints. No matter who's playing, they'll have a good time. So.
And possibly I might be popping up at one of the Zia stores.
For Record Store Day, maybe?
For Record Store Day, yeah. Cool. Maybe.
We might be doing that as well.
Yeah, there might be some Black Friday action. I mean, literally Black Friday if I'm DJing. I'm black and it's Friday.
Also, come see me, please. Right. Buy some Record Store Day records.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much. You have a wonderful rest of your day, and don't stop digging. It just keeps spinning.
Thanks.